Okay, guys, it's Saturday morning, and I'm here in my favorite little seat that gives me a chance to get everybody caught up on what's going on. I'm sure you've heard it from a million different places. As I said, to me, the idea is that what I talk about, I want people to understand, is I've either researched or confirmed or everything else that's needed to make sure I'm factual. And I'm dealing with concepts that are real, that people use. I don't know that we posted the topic for this week. Sometimes it's my fault. I don't get back to my producer. And I had said to the producer that this week, to try and keep the title simple, I said I was going to talk about propaganda as an idea, and then talk about things so that we'll understand what we know is correct, at least as much as I can research, confirm, and know for my own. If you can't see me, it's because my producer's standing in front of the camera, but that's okay. Hopefully you can hear me, and that blackout is not the screen where we've been kicked off for saying the wrong thing, because this is not your national networks that have people clicking them on and off or delays. So anyway, I believe that we're just about into Facebook again. So I apologize. We had a little trouble sometimes. Part of what people don't understand, I do from having dealt with. And by the way, that thing is in front of the camera right now, so it's in the middle of the screen. So we're on that. But is that the Culture Radio as well as Facebook? Because take a look where it is in your screen.
I know.
Oh, okay. We are live. I'm always live. It's just a matter of they're broadcasting it, and am I embarrassing myself? I'm not the techie, but I do understand systems and how they work. And let me just say this. I realized when I did the World Wide Web, scientists, engineers I dealt with, and my own reading, I used to laugh when people felt in the early days when PCs were first out and they'd send an email that they hit the button and it's electronic, speed of light. You know, I hit that button, it must be right in your face instantly. I said, even if you're in the same building, it doesn't mean I'm getting it instantly. It depends on the system it goes through or what's happening out there. It's all gotten better. But I can always tell you that electronics, just like a river, are subject to a flow. So if you think of electrons as flowing, even though they'll generally go in a more or less straight path, the things that change that, believe it or not, go back to the understanding of Isaac Newton and Albert Einstein, who tried to catch on later, with the idea of gravitational attraction. What happens when anything is flowing through space, outer space, our airspace, microwave oven sending an electronic signal through your food. You have other molecules that are out there. Even if you're out in what seems empty space, you still have the attractive waves from bodies, you know, physical planets or meteorites or whatever are out there in the vicinity where you are. And everything has a certain amount of magnetic attraction or electronic attraction. So depending on if you could plot every little star or thing that's near you, you could figure out how big they are and how much they're affecting your movement. So as I said, even electronics like water flows, and water, while it would generally flow straight, it hits some harder or softer bodies, a rock or something that makes it turn. That's why when you see these pictures of what they call an alluvial plain, kind of fancy word, means that the water meandered around because it hit something and made these snake-like turns instead of just going straight. Same thing with electronics. So, again, believe me that there are times not just signals being interfered with, but the broadcast of the signal and other things that happen it. We have magnetic storms, like the fancy lights up north, the aurora borealis, that when they happen, they distort signals. Sometimes they blank them out. Anyway, so I had said for this week I wanted to talk about propaganda, and because I grew up in the era of early traveling around in cars and population boom, excuse me, a little bit of a sore throat, after World War II, which was an explosive growth and good for us, because if it wasn't for that growth and the Marshall Plan, the rest of it, we would have gone back into the recession, depression that we were in before the war. The war didn't end it. It just masked it by we got busy, we did things to survive. So propaganda, it's a cute term, so trying to make a cute entry for this thing, I said put up the words propaganda, two words. Propaganda is, of course, usually dissemination of information, which is not always true. And I learned even when I was younger, and I'd give speeches if I wanted to catch somebody's attention. In the middle of a speech, if it's a boring subject, I might say, shut the lights, and everybody would wake up. It just didn't fit in there. So an interruption in what your mind would perceive as a normal flow will sometimes get your attention. That's why blinking lights get your attention in the middle of a fog better than a steady light. So propaganda is the dissemination of information. Could be true, but generally it's used to make a point so that people will follow what you want to do, gather the troops and stuff. Propaganda, people don't think of it that way, is really a message, and a message could be brutal. There was, in what was called Transylvania, there was a famous guy called Vlad the Impaler. He used to take his enemies, and he would take them and impale them on a wooden stake, the whole damn body, not just the head in a lot of cases. Of course, the good thing is you generally died when they did that, because otherwise that would be very uncomfortable, being stuck up on a stake like a pig on a spit being barbecued. So they put it out there, and that was telling people, you're going to face these ugly things, we don't kid around, be careful before you attack us or come near. Scaring people off. To go back, crucifixion, before it became a symbol with Christ and for Catholicism, it was used to scare people. That's why the Roman Empire, when they did certain things, would put people at the roadside and just put them all along on, if not a cross, at least a T-shaped thing, to scare other people about playing around with us. We don't kid around, is what they were saying. So depending on how nasty they were, they didn't enslave you or take you back to work in their empire. They just tell you, oh, yeah, you can hang around our territory, but it'll be the last hanging around you do. Hangings were, again, the same thing. Dismemberments in Braveheart, where they took him toward the end of the movie, they put him on a table in front of a bunch of people. The idea was that guy who was going to cut him open, dismember him, pull him apart. It was to make people more complicit with what the management, the kingdom, the dictator wanted you to do. They figured if you question, you're going to be afraid. History has proven that it didn't deter people from feeling, well, you're not going to catch me because I'm smarter. But propaganda is used to make a point. It could be a good point. It could be to deflect what you're doing. The reason I brought it up, of course, is we're living with a president who I believe is one of the great marketing geniuses, just like I believe that Hitler and Mussolini, Stalin, Marcos in the Philippines, they had a natural talent for understanding the human psyche without ever getting a degree in psychology. They really understood what motivated people, and they used it. Hitler, as I've said, when he started to take over, even in Germany, after a while, so he didn't have to worry about any revolution going on or other things, you want to shift people's focus so they don't do things that you have to worry about while you're spreading your empire or taking more power. For example, he would go into towns and he would take the most downtrodden person. Let's say a shoemaker, who was a good profession, but everybody considered them one of the lowly people in town. And he'd make them the burgomeister, the guy who was in charge of the town. They, of course, were maltreated or mistreated by people. So when they were in charge, they got even with these people, because now they had the power. Hitler had appointed them. So there are a lot of different ways that you put out a signal. Propaganda is the term for disseminating information, although generally propaganda is considered to be misleading information, not just horrific depictions of what you'll do to people if they come into your territory. And the reason I said As a kid, we didn't have electronics or cell phones or cutesy games. We maybe had some building blocks, and these were not Legos. And that was at home, so in the car, you had to make up games. We had word games. There's still one that's around. I'm sure people have heard of it, called Hangman, where you'd play the game, and everybody would pick another letter, and you could change the word as long as you knew that if you were challenged, you had a real word in mind. And the person to put the last letter in place gets another part of his body on the hangman's noose till you lose the game. They use stick figures. So you had somewhere around 6 or 7 chances of making a mistake before you were hung and you lose that round. So the idea, I kidded around with words because that's how I grew up. It made me learn words and the root of them and thinking about them and how they could be used differently. So I said I wanted to put up, if we didn't, proper as a word and gander right after it. Proper is something that when you look in a dictionary, it's what do people think is correct or right. It's not just correct or right, but genuine. It's real, okay? So it isn't just that you dress nicely and you speak politely, but it's also being genuine or real. Gander, when I split it into two words that are not the root of propaganda, gander, one of the first meanings of gander, it's a male goose when they're an adult. But gander, as I've said in a number of my podcasts, I always like that people should look at words because there are multiple meanings. So how is a word used? In the old days, they taught us it was the context of the statement. But when people shout things, you want to be sure you know what you're dealing with. So gander is to look at. So when you look at something, you take a gander in the old parlance, colloquially. So you look at what's going on. And that gander informs you. We're back to the thing that if your eyes are seeing it, you generally believe it, unless it's an illusion, of course. So how do we process and do things? So that's what I'm kind of getting at. I want us all to understand mixed messages because we have a man who sits in the Oval Office who is great at putting messages out, and within a few minutes, he can put out the equal and opposite message. I've discussed before when in public school as a child I learned debating was at least two sides of an issue. And even though I'd be on one side, you know, you could think of the attorneys in a court. One's the prosecutor, one's the defendant's attorneys. But, you know, if you're trained in a law or language or whatever it is, if need be, if they had to move you from one side to the other, you should be capable by your training, background, and understanding to argue the opposite side. Because sometimes the opposite side is what you might be stuck with discussing. People deserve to get a defense, so we have public defenders. So again, what's proper? So when you look at wars, the First World War, and because they said it was involving enough of the planet, and it was major, and millions of people, during the First World War, propaganda is a weapon of morale. You want to make the other people feel they're losing or doing it. Now, in what was not an electronic age, more still mechanical, from around 1914 to 18, depending which country you were in that went in the war. We got in late in the war. But the Allies, because they were grouped together, were better than the Germans at propaganda. And for people who don't know it, historically, America, which had no official national language, we had a lot of German immigrants in the country from the 1800s up to the early 1900s. And a lot of them were lobbying for German to become our official national language. It didn't happen. So you had a lot of German-speaking people. So if you're running a campaign in Europe and you know you got a lot of German people, you want to send stuff. And in the early 1900s, there were already transatlantic cables, not fiber optics, not satellites, but a wire that was heavily coated, resting at the bottom of the water, taking signals from one side of the Atlantic Ocean to the other. So what they did was the British, early on in the war, actually cut the German cables so they couldn't send signals and send propaganda or misinformation to the public, a lot of which did speak German. So this is, again, how you control information that could affect the war. They also back then used what they called shells, meaning, you know, you had artillery shells, mortar shells, whatever they had for a projectile, they would sometimes fill with information, shoot it out, and it would spill. The early planes they used, they'd sometimes throw stuff out. It would look like a storm of paper. The idea was they wanted to do it. It also says by radio, but radio wasn't just coming to your local radio in the 1917s or 18s, but they'd also be broadcasting over a loudspeaker system at the battlefield. The idea was to demoralize the opposition. So this is what propaganda does, tries to give you a poor view or make you believe what they're telling you so that you'll back them. And believe it or not, in the age I grew up, you had radio and television had grown tremendously. They had major networks. We had, if you lived in a place like New York, maybe you had up to 17 channels you could use. That sounds like nothing nowadays. But there was also control because they didn't want you cursing on those channels. Cursing depended on who was looking. The moral code, married couple couldn't sleep in the same bed in the movie. They'd be in separate beds. So all these things went on. And for example, in the First World War with Germany, there were things where they said the German translation, what you were looking at a factory, meant that they were taking bodies and dismembering and converting them. Well, what they were looking at, as I remember at the time, when I read about it in history, it was actually a place where they took horses, where they'd cut them up for meat, for glue, for a million other things. But the propaganda was they were taking bodies and cutting them up. Lo and behold, what was propaganda in World War I became real in World War II when they had the Holocaust and not just the concentration camps. So these things are used by people to stir up resentment, hopefully get people to follow a leader. And we've got a guy who is great at spinning. You give him 5 minutes and he'll be on the other side of the table of whatever he said, and he'll make you believe that you didn't hear that from him. It can't be, even if you show him the video. Doesn't matter. Cute thing over the concentration camps, and it started way before that. The actual thing went back probably 150 years earlier than World War II. The prisoners that were in these concentration camps, they had a metallic letters over the door, not just saying it was Auschwitz or Buchenwald or somewhere else. It would say three words, Arbeit macht frei. Arbeit means work, macht means make, and frei is free. So work will set you free. Or, you know, working hard. There were a lot of translations depending where you came from. But they said if you're going in, you work hard, it's like saying you're going to go in prison, you're going to spend your time, and then you're going to come out, and you will have realized you don't want that hard labor, you're going to behave better in society. Well, of course, the Arbeit macht frei, some of the camps you went into, you didn't even last the first day you were in. They sent you into showers that were gas chambers. They used many different ways. So propaganda is the use of words or blanking out or telling people don't listen to that. We're telling you deep state. All of a sudden, these networks that were covered by the federal government, that man in the Oval Office generally has power over, the federal government had rules and regulations to say you can't say things that are not true. You could lose your license. Now, in this day of electronics, we have people that I know are on the internet all the time. And they may rarely even look up a news network because, I hate to say it, if you want interesting, crazy things, there are people sending in these little viral videos from all over the planet. You could spend all your waking time looking at cars jumping off of mountains, people rolling over on a horse or a bike or whatever. It's like at one point we had on TV stupid videos. They didn't call it that, but that's what it was. And it was a popular show. People like to watch other people do stupid things. maybe it makes us feel better that we're not that bad. We should look at ourselves carefully, because when it comes down to it, humanity generally is helpful when people need help. This country, the reason we've been so great is we are, as far as I'm concerned, having traveled a fair amount internationally during my career to different hemispheres, different areas, different countries. We have over 200 recognized countries, but I've covered minimally 50 of them, probably. By the way, Paula on Facebook, thank you. You're right. Paula had pointed out, and there are so many examples, so let me take the one she said. Cartoons were used, and they still are. In the days when there were many people reading newspapers, they didn't have radios or they wanted to get more content in the newspaper, a good cartoonist would draw a picture with little labels on it, and public opinion would be pushed by this thing. So yes, when they say cartoons, they don't mean, you know, Tom and Jerry beating each other up, or the Roadrunner chasing someone. There are what are generally labeled as political cartoons. They don't mean they're trying to lie to you, but they're trying to make a point that either that paper or that person is backing, that something that's happening they don't think is good. So it could be a protest, the cartoon, or it could be letting you understand what's going on. Usually it's limited, but again, the idea of an image with some words and a proper drawing can get stuck in your mind. So yes, Paula, thank you very much, and thanks for the watch party. I found out, as I said, I have a lot of those, so when you see likes on my site, you could take the likes and multiply it by 10 from what I've found out, because I've had watch parties as big as 50 and as small as 5 to 10. And I thank you all for tuning in. Hopefully I give you something that matters to think about. I'm not trying to convince you. I'm trying to just inform. That's my idea. And as I said, anytime any of you have people who they want to come on, people you think should be on, have them contact us. Reach out. We're always open to it. And subjects, again, the same thing. Although, because we have a guy in the Oval Office who likes attention, I used to joke when he first started that the only hashtag they should do is hashtag DLB. The D stands for daddy, the L stands for little, and the B stands for boy. I felt his father sent him away to academies that he could afford because he had a lot of money that he had built up. So he didn't get to grow up with the interaction with the family and the father's training and the father's love when he slaps him in the face or the ass to tell him that's good or that's bad. So the interaction was more with other people. How do you get along? How do you appear to everybody else? So fancy psychological terminology would be arrested social development. He, of course, doesn't think so. As long as he could do what he wants and live where he wants and get away with what he wants, he's like anybody else. He'll keep trying and pushing it, and he feels he's on top. He'll block everything. So when we're young and we start to hear things and feel, this is how we learn, how we form our ideas, learn things. We are, when we're dropped into this world, as we come out through the birth canal and get put in a hospital bassinet and get taken home and dragged around and pinched and beaten by grandmothers who want to eat our fingers and hands or whatever it is in a loving way, all of this shapes the way we're interacting because we don't know what this world is. We just dropped into it. And we are a supercomputer that has all of these periphery devices, great hearing, great optics, great digital. As we learn to control the muscles, you watch a baby. It's always interesting to me to see how much they learn and how they do things, how they first locomote themselves. They interact with their environment. That's what's going on. So the earliest thing we do is we develop all of these things, and then we do things that somebody may smack us or talk to us depending upon the way they want to make their point. And this becomes important as to how you treat society, as to how society treated you in some cases. Doesn't excuse wrongdoing. Never in my book does it excuse it. If you're intelligent enough to decide you're going to do something, you should be intelligent enough to understand the consequences of what you're doing. So we develop two words that I like, parameters or perimeter. Perimeter, I always loved math and language. Perimeter is, of course, a circle. It goes around something. So we could think of it as a circle that we feel we're comfortable within, we don't want to venture out of, whether it's top, bottom, left, right. Depends how big the circle is, depending on what we feel is our comfort zone. And I don't mean just where we live, but interacting with people, doing work. Parameters, I like the word better, because it made me feel you've got an upper and lower, because, again, parameters could be left and right. It's kind of two parallel lines defining what you think is. You shouldn't go past these things. But within them, you've got a lot of latitude. So you learn this when you're younger. Sometimes you mislearn it, because if you get away with doing something, if you steal something off a fruit stand, you feel, hey, maybe I'm good at stealing and I can grab something and won't get thrown in jail. Bad thing. You want to still understand that people respect you, that you respect other people's value, what you take from someone. And don't get me wrong, there are extreme situations, but what you take from someone means someone else put their time and effort, or many people, into getting that thing to where you found it, and maybe they need it. And I'm not saying something that was lost, something that obviously didn't belong to you. So in the youth, we develop this by interacting with people and how they treat us and what they say is right or wrong or what they notice us doing and punish us for. So I wanted to go back to the thing with this president is when anything's happening or he knows something's happening, he will come up with some ridiculous thing to make the markets jump or this happen or something else. We've discussed this. But there are some basics that are absolute that if you've really listen to either what I'm saying or read enough, you'll find out makes sense. The first one, he walked around during his campaign and during other times he did, but definitely after he got in office. Everybody should pay their fair share. Everybody saw him when he first went to a NATO meeting and said, well, NATO, all these people are not paying the full percentage that they should pay. We're paying the balance. Interesting. So you've got a man who bragged throughout his career, even before he ran for president, and definitely during the campaign. You can go back, pull up videos, you could see it. He would brag how brilliant he is because he pays no taxes. Now, is he lying to us? Maybe he paid 10 bucks 1 year because he didn't add the numbers up right. But basically, he, as his father did, according to a one-year study the New York Times did, they avoided taxes in many, many ways. And when I use the term avoid, there's avoidance and evasion. One is illegal. It depends on who's looking at it and what they can prove. So we're back to the thing with collusion and conspiracy. Well, collusion is not a crime, and there was no collusion. Again, read the Mueller report if you get a chance. It was over 150 times, I believe, that there was interaction between him and his campaign and Russia. Country that has always been against us, no matter how they act. And Vladimir Putin, who is a former top KGB officer, those people, and I, on an earlier podcast, probably 6-9 months ago, I said I've interacted with KGB officers, one that I had to negotiate with in Switzerland when the curtain came down because he was becoming an investor. They had money. They were like people who were on the inside, and they made money their own way. They wouldn't trust anything you tell them, even if you could show them in black and white that it works. I was there to help them understand how to run an open government. It was in Poland at the time that they were looking at because they lost the Eastern Bloc. Because of the way they ran their economy, they messed it all up. So it went down. They spent too big a percentage on weapons and not enough on things and kept people so diverse that they couldn't run a normal economy. And eventually, economics will come back and bite you, not just in the ass, but wherever it needs to. So paying your fair share. He goes and tells these people at NATO, then at the UN, and then other countries. They said, well, China's been ripping us off and everything else. Let me tell you this. The only reason China got to grow the way it did was because we had people in companies who recognized that if they can produce these things in China because of modern air transportation and water, lower costs and the rest of it, They could pocket more money by bringing it back here and marketing it to us, but not having any of that income tax things because they keep the income offshore. It's a bunch of games, but what they're really doing, because as I've proved to everybody, the economics is that we pay all the expenses of any goods or services a company sells, plus a profit that they need. So no company pays taxes or expenses unless they go out of business because they're running it stupidly. So if we're paying all of it, we want to make sure those taxes go in our treasury. When they keep them offshore or defer them, other countries, when they use value-added tax, and I'm not saying switch our tax system, we just have to make an adjustment or two, and I may talk about that next week. We've paid these monies. That should go in our treasury, because if they don't, when we have a bigger deficit, they borrow, they need us to pay more taxes in the future. So when they complain about these things going on, they want to blame each other. No, 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 please. We the public, 98% of us, spend in the current economy over $14 trillion for goods and services. When you hear we're at 20 or 21 trillion, the other 6 or 7 is companies buying goods to go into next year's stuff. So we have a lot of power. We are the market. We should understand this better, and voting is the way we exercise our power. It doesn't take being a millionaire or a billionaire to exercise power. No matter how much money they have, they try and influence you through propaganda, good or bad, to vote for something they want to keep their power. If we vote people in to change things, not just someone who's unknown, someone who has some kind of record, not someone who we think is going to be a change agent and drain the swamp, please look at the cabinet this man has. Look at what they've done. The only big legislation was tax. We will talk about that. So let me get into the things that I wanted to say. Pay your fair share. Whenever you hear anybody talk about Donald and pay your fair share, just remind them, when is he going to pay his fair share? He has boasted about paying no taxes, meaning he's driving on roads, landing in airports, using the security of our military for him to prosper and do what he wants, but not contributing. Not contributing. So the first thing to always remember, no matter what bullshit he puts out, whatever distractions he wants to give you, and don't get me wrong, some of them are real and we got to make sure he doesn't get us in a war or a conflict that's unnecessary. When is he going to pay his fair share? And if somebody doesn't understand it, just tell him simply, go back and look at it. He tells you he never paid any taxes. So we're obviously carrying the load for him. Yet he is going after everybody else on the planet saying they're not paying their fair share. So the question again is to anybody who wants to support him is, when is he going to pay his fair share? Second, climate change. We had this cute little thing with the shootdown of a drone. If I understand right, it could cost anywhere from 10 to 20 or even 100 million, a real sophisticated drone, a big one. But it was only money. So he's backed off his thing about attacking Iran because he found out, oh, they would have casualties. We had no one in the drone. So they're going to argue about where that drone was. When you hear him talking about it, and we are a very advanced nation when it comes to electronics and technical stuff. We have satellites, we have images. They showed you a little dot on the screen with a puff of smoke when it got hit. These things can pinpoint where was that drone when it got hit. So I'm going to say two different things about that. One, here he is, and he used the word scientific when he talked about it. We have scientific proof that that was not over Iranian territory when it was shot down. Let me say there were planes, I can go back and discuss the incidents where Russia shot down a Korean airline plane, and I used to travel a lot up and back to the Asian area. Friends were wondering, was I on that plane by any chance? It's a commercial jet. Civilians were shot out of the air by Russia because it was flying. The Koreans would go across the tip of what was called the Sakhalin Islands. So they invaded their airspace even if they didn't stay in it. So once they've done it, technically you've invaded them. Like Trump likes to talk of all these children and women and families coming across the border, he calls it an invasion. And he's treating them and makes them prisoners. So think about it like this. If that had strayed into Iranian airspace for a moment, they can't shoot it the moment it strays in, but they shoot it because it strayed in. So he'd need to get the whole thing. But the key point is, here's our wonderful president talking about scientifically we know exactly where it was when it was shot. This is the man who wants you to believe that science doesn't know what it's talking about. When it comes to climate change, A, these scientists don't know what. A, the planet's gotten warmer and hotter and the rest of it. And if it's a cool day, how is the planet heating? He'll throw stupid logic at you. So here's a man who's using science to say the Iranians are wrong. They shot it down over international space. Well, that may be where they shot it down. I'd love to know the full trajectory or course, because if it did veer, then the Iranians are going to claim, when they finally get their information, that, well, you invaded our space, so therefore we shot you down. If you run through my country when you're on the way out of the border, I can still shoot you. You invaded my country. I'm not taking sides, folks. There are stupid things that we do, and I'm happy he didn't order a retaliation. And the stupidest thing was, if you put yourself in the Iranian, and I'm not for what they're doing, believe me, but you don't negotiate, use pressure, because they used sanctions to get Iran to the table to agree to that nuclear treaty with other major countries. And then Trump, because it was Obama signing it, it isn't his name or whatever, he just pulls us out. But he not only pulls us out, he puts sanctions on them. You know, if you want to use diplomacy, you want to talk to someone, you don't make them starve because you cut off their food supply. You tell them, you've got an agreement, but I don't like it. I'm going to start reimposing sanctions on you if we can't get together at a table and talk. Believe me, I've studied diplomacy. I've studied warfare. You've got to know which weapon to use and how to use it so you don't box yourself in. That's what he's doing. When you talk about climate change, which is scientific, which he now uses it when it suits him, for where our drone was when it was shot down, and that's the point I'm making. The state of Montana, there's a park called Glacier National Park. We had, and I may be a little off on the numbers, we had as many as what's called 150 glaciers. Glacier is generally permanent or semi-permanent ice. It's frozen. It's in an atmosphere where it's generally going to stay frozen. And I've been out west and seen certain glacial formations. They're in a place where it's cool enough that it's not going to melt. They had around 150 glaciers in the state of Montana. They're now down to 25. Whether you want to call it pollution, global heating, global warming, whatever it is, we have to deal with it. If we close our eyes and say sea levels aren't rising until the water is in our dining room, then it's a little different. Before you build the seawall, you got to pump the water out. Where are you going to put it? The ocean has risen. When you defer things, and I've seen construction projects of all kinds, major infrastructure, regular buildings, when you get the time and you know you're going to need something in the future, if you could do it now, it's going to cost you less than it generally will cost you in the future. Because we pay the price. Because we buy the products or the services. We, the public in our country, pay for everything. Period. So climate change, remind him he used the word science when he wanted to tell Iran we knew where our drone was. The Southern Wall. These are just facts that when you hear shit, because he's going to be campaigning and repeating slogans, we all know that he said Mexico's going to pay for the wall. Now they're spinning that because Mexico put some National Guard people on the end and blah, 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 or they're going to hold some of these people, which we may reimburse them for, that Mexico's paying for the protection, even if they're not paying. That's the wall. Mexico is guarding us. not really happening. There'll still be people crossing the border. And let me remind you, the first 2 years of his presidency, he had an all-Republican Congress. There were immigration bills that came into Congress that included, at one point, over $20 billion for his wall. Congress didn't want to push him forward. He didn't push them to get it forward. We've all heard about Mitch McConnell. If you've really been watching real news or any news network, his wife, Elaine Chao, who's the Secretary of Transportation in Trump's cabinet, she's helped Japanese institutions like Sumitomo Bank, and don't get me wrong, they're a banking institution, they're interested in doing business, but she's helped them, and through her family connections in mainland China, she's also helped mainland China get a lot of contracts and things. We all know that since Trump's been in office, that his companies and his daughter's companies have gotten a lot of trademarks that they never could get before. So let's see where the enrichment is when he talks about the rest of us and paying your fair share. So the wall. It isn't the wall. There are other ways of handling it. When you hear that, just ask him why he didn't push for and sign that bill in the first 2 years that had immigration reform that would have taken care of a lot of what he's talking about and his wall. $20 billion plus is a lot of money to build and repair little pieces of wall. Then, camps. I want to use the term camps. I've been in the military. I've been trained for what to do in different situations. If you understand what you're dealing with, you want to teach yourself survival methods. When you're in camps and stuff in warfare, and we've had enough wars on the planet, there's something called the Geneva Convention. The Geneva Convention, we were one of the main drafters of it, and it goes back, I think, over 100 years right now. I think they got together in Geneva is why they call it the Geneva Convention, because Switzerland was that neutral country where everybody could get together, and Switzerland could cater the party, make good money, but please don't shoot us while you're at it. I'm not picking on them. They picked a stance that worked for them at a point. The Geneva Convention dealt with the treatment of prisoners of war. We would take people to trial or go after them because they were mistreating prisoners, beating our men if they had them in, starving them or whatever. When you look at the Geneva Convention, which we helped draft and we are one of the main signers of, it tells you how to treat people when they're in a prisoner situation. Well, you know what? When you take people and you pull them off the street and you throw them in a jail, we do have penal institutions where there are things that tells you you should give them so much space or a bed or a shower or a toilet or whatever. Well, that's what the Geneva Convention did. It kind of outlined that you can't put them in a building with no windows or no air circulation. You don't have to give them a room at the top hotel with air conditioning and room service, but you have to treat them in what's considered a humane way. I would tell you that if you get someone who's more expert than I am on a Geneva Convention to look what we're doing with these people, especially children, when we throw them in these holding pens. Now, don't get me wrong. You've got to put people in some area to keep them from running wild and losing them, but it doesn't mean you have to maltreat them. So camps, whether you want to call them concentration camps, internment camps, anybody can look to the Geneva Convention. And then second, and don't tell me it's for international, it's a basic way of performing when you have prisoners wherever you've got them. The second thing you could look to, within our country, we have jurisdictions, depending if it's a town, a city, or at the county level. For example, we're here in Orlando. Orlando has its own city building official, and there's the county building official. But there are laws that tell you where you can build, what you can build, what's happening to your neighbor if you've got runoff. So building officials talk about what's legal. I come from New York City. The original building codes in the modern era for HUD and everybody grew out of what were the tenement laws in cities like New York, where they said people are living, we can't have disease starting because of poor sanitary conditions. So we have a history of developing these things in this country. So if you go to any county building official and you'd say, well, I want to go live in this house, whether it's commercial or residential, you have to meet certain codes for safety and sanitary reasons, so that it's for public safety, okay? Non-spreading of diseases and not polluting the water by what you dump into the sewers. So we have laws in our country at every level that tell us before you can be in a building, you've got to get what's generally called, depending where you are, a certificate of occupancy. It means it was inspected as it was put together when the walls weren't closed, what the plumbing, the electrical, so it's safe, so we don't have to come out because you did a shoddy job and the thing burns down and burns a whole neighborhood. We've developed this. All anybody has to do is look at not just the Geneva Convention building codes, where they put these people. Could they have a certificate of occupancy because it has enough sanitary facilities or water that's safe to drink? I'm not saying you have to give them a plush mattress. And by the way, when you see those things that they describe as aluminum foil, those are generally what they were called in the old days, space blankets that were designed or came out of the space program so that they were lightweight, easy to use, but would help you contain heat. They use them on football teams when they're in the middle of a cold and they're sitting on a bench so they don't get too cold and then the muscles won't work right when they put them back in. So people have to understand what's happening. But again, Geneva Convention, building officials, building codes, those should apply to wherever we put people. If they don't, we are breaking the laws, period, no matter who we've incarcerated. Forget about the kidnapping aspect. Our president tells us he's cleared and everything else. Well, tell me, and I want you to understand this, and anytime anybody says, well, he was exonerated, yeah, so he said so, and he got the right attorney in as attorney general. I don't know what their deal is. But that's not an attorney general that I would ever deal with and feel comfortable about, because I've dealt with attorneys all over the planet and I picked them because they're reasonable and understand the laws and understand what's proper for humanity. If he's clear, why is he blocking everything? If he's exonerated and they're not going to hear anything bad, why is he trying to come up with this idea of total immunity to anybody asking anybody a question who worked for him? This man used to use non-disclosure agreements in his personal life because he knew he was doing things that were bad. He wanted to buy people off ahead of time. So please, let's all be smart. If he's clear, let him go testify. If he's such a big, strong man, let him go in front of Congress, a co-equal branch of our government, to answer their questions and see if he could. We all heard that his own lawyers didn't want him to testify because they were afraid he'd perjure himself. That's how smart he is when he tells you how brilliant he is. Nuclear. Nuclear is not a game. There are a lot of things and it takes a lot of science. I don't purport to be anywhere expert on nuclear stuff, but I've studied enough, worked in a company where we built nuclear plants, went to a technical high school, read a lot about it because I know it affects me. It's out there. I can tell you that the nuclear plants we built are different than the ones that were built other places, as I've discussed before. But here's a man who's telling you about the bromance he's having with Kim Jong-un, the head of North Korea. Very, very autocratic regime that you almost can't get a signal in or out of there for propaganda. People get killed if they're anti this guy. He's killed his own family members. He's not the first person to do that. There are many who've done it throughout history. So anyway, he's got this guy who's been, not only has nuclear capability, but is developing missiles. So, okay, he's shut him down, so he gives him the credibility by going there. And then the guy is like poo-pooing him. He's really giving him nothing in return. So we gave away the credibility of the President of the United States meeting with him and got nothing in return, except according to these bromance love letters. At the same time, we have Iran, which is a more advanced society. The majority of the people are well-educated and have tried to revolt, and over time you could see where it's changed. And as they get more and more disgusted with their own leaders, which is what happens, which causes people to leave Europe and come and found America. So as that happens, that dissension, things will change in Iran. What you want to do is control it. So instead of canceling a nuclear agreement that held them down, that we had inspections and they weren't building anything, you put sanctions. You not only get out of the agreement, you put sanctions on. Again, you treat one country who's already put short-range missiles that could hit Japan, which doesn't develop nuclear weapons because of what we did at the end of World War II and how we occupied them and the agreements we made. So they are a power to be reckoned with on the planet. But that doesn't mean they're going to listen forever and not want nuclear arms. And then Saudi Arabia, nuclear? He's allowing Jared, who couldn't get security clearance, to look at everything and take stuff. If you check how many times Jarrett went to the Middle East and his main idea was peace in the Middle East, tell me one peace meeting he's had that's developed anything other than a couple of things that Benjamin Netanyahu has done for the betterment of Israel. And I believe in Israel. I'm Jewish. I helped when I was a kid collect money to grow trees and build the cities there. I believe in a democracy in the Middle East that has grown and is a power to be reckoned with. But whether or not you allow nuclear weapons in one country or give nuclear technology to Saudi Arabia and other Middle East countries, you're proliferating things we don't want. And our president decides there's an emergency going on, he doesn't have to talk to Congress. We have our own operating rules where we do this stuff. So when it comes to nuclear, Kim Jong-un keeps playing with him, no matter what he seems to say. Oh, yeah, he's going to denuclearize. He's not going to denuclearize. That's his power. He may open the country, do some economics. That's how you open a country. I used to call it the Levi Revolution 40 years ago, that when people have enough freedom to run around in jeans and enjoy themselves and go to a ball game or entertainment, after a while they don't want somebody telling them just to march goose step and follow them. You want this openness in a society so that eventually people don't want to be pushed down in little boxes and told what to do. That's what will save us from war more than anything else. He obviously doesn't get this. Then, he's actually making the world better for China and Russia, which have been getting together more recently. And by the way, I can tell you that there's a long history of Russia and China not trusting each other. But they're going to get together because China will need a new market if we stop buying the goods, because no matter how you put the tariffs on, which are on us, we pay it. He's given away half our treasury to the less than 1% on his tax cut. Now we're rebuilding the treasury on the tariffs that he's charging. Why doesn't he start opening factories and saying we're going to build it here, pay a little more, but China will starve their population and their economy? They use the money for them to build up their forces all over the world, and that's what they've been doing. Okay, James on Instagram. He was worried about Iran by not Russia and North Korea, but not Russia and North Korea. What makes them different? Okay, North Korea has weapons. North Korea is beholden to China for whatever happens. China will support them unless we give them a reason not to. And China doesn't want us to get in there in North Korea, bomb them and change them, because then North Korea is a buffer on one big part of China, on one of the parts of their southern border. Russia is a spoiler where anything they could do, because they've always hated that this democracy is telling them what to do, and it's a very autocratic government. So as I was just getting into, forgetting what Iran's doing, which is more of an intellectual advanced society, no matter that they have a sort of dictatorship running it, almost a beneficent dictatorship, if we play it right on the psychological side. Russia and China could get together because, think about it, Russia and China could come after us to defend Iran if it suited them. So then if they're not going to sell to us, China might start selling to Russia, because Russia never built its economy the way we did. So they'd make a great thing. The transportation costs would be different from China to Russia, and they'd both build up, and we'd lose our market, but we'd have to go back to what we used to do, making our own stuff. It's a complicated world. We have a lot of very intelligent people who've dealt with this, and now we got a man who deals with it on his gut, who went into a deal because he bought a piece of property, and he's going to tell you, and he's ready to walk away from the table. You can't walk away from our international operations and alliances, because if you're going to go in someplace and go after Iran, you need those allies that you've pissed and moaned about not paying their fair share, while you as an individual laugh about paying nothing to our government and supporting us and our treasury. So don't listen to the diversions he puts out. Keep these facts in your mind. So yes, the way he's moving, China and Russia may work together because it suits them. At the beginning of World War II, Germany signed the peace agreement with Russia because they didn't want them getting in against them while they were beating everybody else till they were ready to go after Russia. People sign agreements. You got to understand if it's just strategic at a point. So China and Russia are working together and willing to work together because the common purpose is to make us weaker. That's an oversimplification. It's a big world. There are a lot of things. But we have some people who know enough about it. Trump doesn't talk to them or need them because he tells you how brilliant he is. Anyway, he's still shaping policy in his head. Let's remember, he picked on five guys who were picked up in Central Park many years ago because of a murder. He spent money taking out ads in every paper. He still doesn't apologize. Even though, again, science, which he likes to deny, till he talks about how scientific we are, and we can pinpoint where our drone was when it was shot down. He doesn't understand that DNA proved these guys had nothing to do with it. He was looking to get them executed, and he still doesn't apologize. He decided because of who they are. Remember, this is a man who has shown his racial tendencies many different ways. He's deciding because of who they are and maybe their skin color or where they're from. Well, why were they in there? They must have done something wrong. So we're going to punish people because our exalted leader, if we allow him to be a universal leader with nobody to answer to, he wants to just say, you should get executed, you should get executed. Go back to the French Revolution. Even the guys who were breaking down the government to make them more free. Tale of Two Cities, read the book. You had people who were just executing people because they didn't like the way they looked. Anyway, the last thing I want to get to, because these are reality things, okay? No matter what they say, ask them about it. So China and Russia are moving in because of things we're doing. They love us being alienated from the rest of the world. Trump is getting rid of things we've built over 70, 80 years to protect us against autocratic or dictatorial countries taking over. And we, because of greed of companies and people who moved production over to China, helped them grow, and they're using that money to take over in other hemispheres and other countries. Check it out. I've been in Panama when China recently funded the building of the newest canal there. They made sure that American things changed. You couldn't use an American Express. You couldn't use American Express traveler's checks. They closed banks. They wouldn't exchange certain things that they're funding. And I'd been in that country before. So you think Panama suddenly decided that money was no good? No. China, when they were funding what Panama wanted, China wanted a foothold. So they made this country that we helped build. And I'm not saying we did everything nice when we did it. But they made this country of Panama push our interests out of there after years of it being a place that we helped protect and defend. Start to understand what's behind what these people are doing. Lastly, I want to point out the USDA is the U.S. Department of Agriculture. We ended up being the breadbasket to the world for a while. Our farmers have been great. We've scientifically gone ahead, figured out how to water fields, kill bugs, do other things, and feed the world to a certain extent and spread that thing out there. But the USDA has a group of scientists that were always in Washington that did climate research and other things. Well, guess what our exalted leader has done? Through his people who run that agency, he's telling them that all these people in Washington, they're going to be shifted. They're going to open their office out in the middle of Kansas someplace. So if you have a family and you've been living there, you got to sell your house. I don't